Welcome back to a new episode of 7 Minutes, your friendly neighborhood podcast of 7 minutes minimum or more, usually much more. I am one of your three hosts, Angela.
I am Zach.
I am Robert.
And we're here with our 11th episode.
Big double digits.
Yeah. Reached a milestone. Now we're going for another.
We're in unprecedented territory where every episode is a milestone.
Yeah. This is true.
It's like hitting the home run record and they just keep hitting home runs afterwards. Like, that's the new record and that's the new record.
That's right. Well, we have an interesting episode. Today we're going to be talking about...
Should we tell them? Or is it a secret?
Go to bed. we're discussing secrets and Easter eggs in games, which is obviously an open-ended discussion, but see where it takes us.
But first, I think we shall discuss what have we been playing lately.
That's right.
So I'm sure Zach will start us off with the latest news about Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah, I certainly can. I have been playing, I'd previously played Witcher 3 on Switch. Mm-hmm. And before that, I played it on Xbox One. And before that, I played it on PS4. I played a lot of Witcher 3 over the years. But this is the first time I hadn't really played New Game Plus before. You take your very own Geralt, his equipment and levels carry over. Everything gets scaled up to be more difficult. And I'm working through... bit by bit, the Velen segment of Witcher 3 New Game Plus on Switch. The visuals are fine, I guess, considering for the Switch version. But it is nice to have something to dip into.
Yeah, I mean they're definitely a little rough, especially some texture problems. And when you compare it to having played on the PS4, or the Xbox One, it's definitely a difference. But for me, it's just more like the gameplay is fun, the story is amazing, and the characters are amazing, and the voice work is fantastic, so I can work with the...
Yeah, and I play in handheld mode on a Switch Lite, so it's got a smaller screen, and so that showing it in its best light, certainly. And I'm playing it on between Death March and New Game Plus, and the fact that my Griffin armor is... very outdated. I have like the high level Griffin armor from New Game, but I'm not high enough to get the New Game Plus version. Mm-hmm. But I'm still committed to the Griffin armor because it lets me double cast signs. Mm-hmm. But what it means is I'm very squishy. So sometimes I can fight a bunch of enemies for a while, keep my shields up and be okay. And then shortly after that, a bandit dings me once with a blackjack and I'm just instantly dead. So it's a little bit of rough on the balance there. That's what I've been playing on the go. At home, of course, I've been playing Final Fantasy XIV.
As have I.
Yeah. I'm trying leveling and trying out different jobs. I just got Monk to max level and picked out a really cool looking outfit, which Angela was not super enthusiastic about. She took a look at it and thought, like, that's fine.
Yeah, it was okay. But then almost immediately,
like 10 minutes later, I got like stopped in game by somebody who was like, "Whoa, you look awesome. How did you get that?" So I was waving that in Angela's face.
Yeah.
Feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah.
But that's about it for me. A lot of Final Fantasy 14, so.
Yeah, same. I won't spend too much time on this update because there's really not a whole lot to say. But yeah, I've been playing a lot of that. Continuing to play a lot of Mario Kart Tour and Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, which I'm getting more into. I still play New Horizons a little bit every day, but getting more into Pocket Camp again.
I have been playing on my Xbox. So I have not had either my Xbox 360 or One hooked up. The One probably hasn't been hooked up for maybe a year. Maybe a little less than that. It feels like it's been a year, though. And then my 360, I have not plugged that in and played it in probably 5 years. So I found a cheap 360 at a Savers, but it was like the last version of the 360. Hooked it all up. Everything was cool, but it's lacking memory. And I don't even know what kind of memory that system uses. So I was like, man, I feel like having my 360 hooked up, but this one ain't going to work because it has no memory. So I hooked up my second gen 360, and that thing fired right up. It felt like it was a major flashback to years ago. So, and then the one I hooked up as well. So I've been in a mood to play Gears of War. So at first I was just going to run through my, because I have almost all the games for 360. Actually, I have all the 360 games. I don't have what came after, I think. But my friend reminded me that there's the Ultimate Edition of Gears of War for Xbox One. So I found that real cheap and have been playing that with my girlfriend. And we don't have Xbox Live, but we're just kind of playing at the same time as each other on the phone. So that's been super fun. I forgot how incredibly satisfying Gears is and how likable all those characters are in the first game. But I've never made it past the first game. I think the last time I played it was with a different friend, and we played it on like the hardest difficulty level. Mm-hmm. And I just remember it took a while to get through it. But since I'm not playing on the hardest difficulty level this time, it's going a little faster. And then I have Master Chief Collection going as well. And that was like a 100-something gig update.
Yeah.
It took my console on my crappy internet, I think, 3 or 4 straight days of downloading to get everything onto the console.
But you can download specific, or you can like prioritize specific games to play them, right?
I don't know on the one. I know because my girlfriend, Katie, just got Master Chief Collection on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
And that lets you individually download each game. But for the one, I think it's just you have to download everything. But I'm not sure.
Because on the one, I think this might be true of some other newer systems also. Like, you can load into the game before it's finished downloading. You know, yeah. You get, like, that ready notification, and you go in, and then it tells you, oh, we're not done downloading the campaign, can't do anything yet. But it's been a while since I downloaded Master Chief Collection in the first place. I think this is too late to help you. But you can go in and, like, prioritize which games to download, and it would let you play the ones that are ready.
Yeah, so I'm bizarre. I'm aware of the ready feature. I won't do it until everything's situated. So I just kept checking on it, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a while. And I actually played through the first level of the Collector's Edition, the Anniversary Edition of the first Halo on 360. The one
CE or whatever, that one?
Yeah, Combat Evolved, but it's Anniversary Edition. So that's the one with the enhanced graphics.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember like switching back and forth the same way that you can with like, Dragon's Trap or...
That I don't know, but it was super neat seeing the difference between just the 360 and one versions of those games. I think it actually looks significantly better on the one. And then transitioning between the two graphic styles is faster as well.
Which do you prefer?
Because
I came to, I'll tell you, I didn't play any of the Halo games really until Master Chief Collection. And so I didn't really have like nostalgia for the original Xbox graphics. But there's still, I felt like there's some things gained, but also there was really a lot of really interesting strangeness lost in the newer graphics.
Yes, the original version feels more alien.
Yeah.
And there's certain things with, like, the lighting that I liked about the original version that are lost in the new version. So there are definitely advantages to playing it, you know, the classic way. And then I'm looking forward to beating the first Halo because the second Halo got the same treatment for the Master Chief Collection. So you can go back and forth between the graphics. And I have yet to do that. So I'm curious what that's going to look like. Because when I tried to get through the Halo trilogy, I got onto the second game, and I was playing the actual original game, because at that point they didn't have the Anniversary Edition for it.
Mm.
So this time around, I'm curious to see what it looks like.
Was Halo 2 a 360 game?
Or no, it was still Xbox.
That was the original Xbox. Okay.
And then last tidbit for me is, so I got my hands on a GameCube that's brand new. It was incredibly awesome. So I was at a GameStop. This lady was going to trade it in. Of course, they weren't going to take it. And I just pounced. I was like, I'll buy that from you. I noticed in the store, it looked new. Like, everything was still wrapped in the plastic. The cardboard of the box looked fresh still. So anybody who's, like, gotten a new system, you know what I'm talking about. It's all smooth and shiny. So when I ended up getting it the next day from her, I took it home, and when I got it from her, I was like, well, I should look at it first, you know, just to make sure it's not, you know, busted or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the console out, and it looked really clean. But I was like, well, you know, who knows? Maybe it's just never really been used very much. But then I get home, and I start taking everything out. The GameCube controller itself has never been used. Like, the cords were all still wrapped. It had never been removed from the plastic. So I was like, oh, because my mindset was, I'm going to save this in case my GameCube dies. And I have one that's like a backup. But I wanted to make sure it ran. So I was like, oh, this controller's never been touched. I'm like, I'm just going to grab one of my other controllers. And then the cables, it was the same thing. So I grabbed the loose cables that I had. I go to turn it on. And this had to have been something I saw when I was whatever, you know, like a middle school kid when GameCube came out. It said you have to set the date and the time mm-hmm. on the screen. And I was like, oh, crap. I'm like, this really has never been turned on before. It was surreal. It was like being in that moment of when it launched. It was so awesome. So I set the time, and then the test game, I threw Metroid Prime in. And oh, it was just incredible. So that was really fun. So that's what I've been doing. I have something to report this week.
What does that mean?
Been a little lame the last couple times, I think.
Oh. Well, this is a good segue into today's discussion on secrets and Easter eggs. So I guess I will pose a question to start us off. Six, looking very interested. I'm curious, do you guys prefer, secrets as in, you know, like secret levels, secret worlds that you can engage with? Or do you prefer Easter eggs? Just like cool things where it's like, oh, that's like, you know, like kind of like the pictures that are in Ocarina of Time in like in the castle, or like little things that you just kind of get like quick little nods to.
Just to make sure, because I've seen people use some of those terms even interchangeably. Mm-hmm. But I think what you're getting at is that some of these are really just kind of in there as like a wink mm-hmm. and not really part of like the.
That's right.
Your progression through the game or practical purpose in the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, curious.
I absolutely love both. I couldn't pick between either.
Well, I won't be such a coward. I will pick. I like Easter eggs. I do. But I'm really motivated by, like, things I can play with, things I can do in games. And, mm-hmm. and I find it more interesting when there's, you know.
Yeah.
Whether it's progression or some new area you couldn't otherwise get to or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I think for myself, I prefer, you know, like, you know, for example, like in Mario World, you know, or having the like the Star Road area, you know, or like a switch.
Then it goes to the special zone.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff.
Because it's not just secret. It's secret. Plus, you have all these new levels with new challenges. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, curious, another question for you two. What is, and I don't know if you can remember this 100%, but what is one of your earliest memories of a secret or an Easter egg in a game that you were playing?
Well, it's hard to know, like, what, there's some things, at least in the NES era, where it's hard to, like, really decide what's a secret and what's just, like, trickier, because there's a mm-hmm. lot more obtuse game design back then.
Yeah.
I certainly think the Konami code would count.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to say the first thing I remember would be Minus World from the original Super Mario Bros. I don't mm-hmm. know if either of you have ever explored Minus World.
I've never explored it. I know about it, but I've never messed with it.
I forget, like, what... I think you have to, like pass through a wall at some point. I can't remember for sure how to get to Minus World. I only did it once. But it just takes you to this underwater level where all the numbers are wrong and you can't escape. So, like, you're basically stuck there forever. There's no practical purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Minus World is only in the game as kind of a consequence to the really, like, clever and compressed ways NES games are programmed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not not the case that, like, Miyamoto and everyone actually put a Minus World in the game.
So Minus World is almost like a glitch then?
Yeah.
Okay, it's interesting.
For those who might not know what it is, Minus World in the original Super Mario Bros. It's an underwater level. That's all. Is it glitchy beyond just the numbers being weird?
There's either no exit or it loops back to itself. There's no way out. But you can just like swim through it.
But like, is it weird? Like, or like, you know, random textures and stuff like that?
They might be. I'm not sure.
Kind of like, you know, do the cheeps behave strangely?
I have not looked at it in so long. I can't remember.
Yeah. I think my earliest memory of secrets is probably Mario 3. But they were definitely by accident. I didn't know what I was doing. But the one that I actually remember engaging with, you know, like intentionally and looking for secrets and stuff is Mario World. I remember being frustrated by the lack of, you know, there's all the like dotted lines for the boxes that you eventually fill in with the different colors for the different switches. Mm-hmm. And I remember wanting to find the different colored switches. Robert was better at finding those than I was, but I really enjoyed like actively finding things in Mario World. Mario World's actually my favorite Mario game. And part of it is like these just cool, just weird things that you can find in that game. It has such an odd feeling, but the secrets definitely are a big part of it. I would actually almost argue that the secrets are kind of integral to Mario World, kind of like in a similar vein as the side stories in Majora's Mask, involving each mask, are really kind of integral to the game, and they are technically side stories and side content, and you don't have to do most of it. Likewise, I feel like the secrets, you don't have to do most of the secrets in Mario World. Some of them you do have to do to progress, but most of them you don't. But I feel like you're missing out on a lot of content if you don't look for those.
Yeah, with Mario World in particular, I prefer the way Mario 3 does it because of course I do. But like Mario World really does use discovery as part of its progression of the game, right? Like it communicates that with like whether a level is yellow or red on the map, because the red ones have multiple exits, and the game will tell you at the title screen whether you've gotten all the exits or not, right? It becomes more of like, I don't want to be too dismissive and call it a checklist, but there's kind of like this open, explicit invitation from the game to like look around and find stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Mario 3, there are a lot of strange secrets in the game, and they're not really laid out in a systematic way. Like, you know, there's finding warp whistles, which kind of requires going out of your way. Mm-hmm. There's figuring out that you can use a warp whistle in the warp world to go straight to World 8.
Yeah.
There's the insanity of, like, in particular levels, if you get enough coins, you make this extra mushroom house appear on the map. And then the absolute insanity of there are some levels in that game where I think it's only in a few of the worlds, but if you get a score that ends in a tens digit and the number of coins you have is that tens digit repeated. So like if your score ends in like 40 and you have 44 coins and you finish the stage with an even timer and it's in one of these specific worlds, you do all of that, then one of the Hammer Brothers on the map will turn into a pirate ship filled with coins.
Yes.
Does it turn into a... I thought it just appears on the map.
No, I think a Hammer Brother switches.
Because I know exactly...
Because you get to the end of the pirate ship and you fight the Hammer Brother.
Huh. I just remember that appearing in the first world.
Yeah.
And it's like... I don't remember being the Hammer Bro, though. But regardless, that is a really good bit of a secret in Mario 3. I
have very rarely gotten the coin.
I go for it every single time. I forget what world it is and what stage it is in the first world, but I know what the stage is when I'm playing, and every time I try to go for it, and sometimes I get it.
Yeah.
I usually, when I try to do it, I just try to do it in the first stage.
My earliest memory of secrets, there's two. The first isn't, well, basically, my Aunt Lori somehow, or me and Angie's Aunt Lori, somehow knew all these random secrets about the first Mario game. And I don't know where she learned them, but I just remember being transfixed on this knowledge that she had. And, you know, as a kid, I'm playing Mario Brothers and have zero, you know, knowledge of what games were like beforehand, but that game kind of took it to the next level in terms of secrets. Like, that was really one of the allures of it for people, because it was like, oh, you know, I jumped up and there's a random block here and there's a one up in it. What other things are just randomly here? So having someone who knew some of those secrets was really awesome. Apparently I would abduct her every time she'd come to our grandma's house and be like, Lori, show me more of the secrets. And then another example, the other one I remember being really young was Mario World, going to Walden Books in South Shore and Alameda and getting the, I think it's the top secret guide. It's shaped like a paperback. It's black and white. And that book goes over every exit and every secret in the game. And that just blew my mind as a kid for some reason. So, like, not just the fact that there's the Star Road. It's like the Star Road has secret exits that take you to the special zone. And then going through the whole special zone and then seeing the entire game world transformed. That was just this jaw-dropping thing as a kid. And I honestly don't really know why. It just felt so special.
Yeah, this isn't secrets per se, but like one of the coolest things about being a subscriber to like Nintendo Power back in the day is they would print maps of the stages. And in the case where this made sense, like if it was a map from like Castlevania or Ninja Gaiden, it would point out and like tell you what is in every candle in the stage. And it was just like a way of like laying out this information that you would otherwise like have to hunt around for and mostly forget. And just like it really changes the way you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That book, so we got Nintendo Power, I think, because I have our entire collection in my room, and I think we started around, like, the issue 70-something. So moving from that forward, we have all of it. But we didn't have Nintendo Power when we were playing, like, the NES games. Mm-hmm. And so then when the Super Nintendo finally shows up and we're playing those games, at some point our Aunt Linda subscribed us, but that book was the first time I'd seen something about video games and was giving me secrets. There was also the what was it called? I think that this might be what I'm thinking of, the top secret. So Nintendo Power always had the classified information section. Yep. And Nintendo Power put out what was basically just a compilation of all
those. I think it
was
called Top Secret.
Yeah, that was another one that was just this tome where I was like, this is incredible. There's all these secrets. And then seeing the games I'd never played in that book, too, was also like, oh, there's a Batman game. I want a Batman game.
I remember being afraid of missing number in Red and Blue. I remember hearing about it and being afraid that I was going to randomly encounter it at some point and all my Pokemon were going to be gone.
Like the missing number would destroy your Pokemon, or that it would like herald a glitch that would otherwise
file. There were rumors. There were rumors. I don't even remember what they all were anymore, but I think, and who knows if this was just my friends being idiots. I just remember us talking about missing number and like, it could destroy your game.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that is fascinating about this conversation is that secrets felt different when there was no internet to go to.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you're depending on like what you're getting in Nintendo Power or Tips and Tricks or these different magazines. And as you're going through trying to find this stuff, it's like it's less systematic than it is now. Because like now it's like someone will go in to the code, you know, and can find tooth comb, go through it. Whereas before, it was people trying to figure stuff out. And then some of the...
Well, it just turns out some people are better than at figuring stuff out than other people.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just kind of neat because, like, back in the day, it was just, like, a lot of trial and error. But then, you know, there was some stuff that slipped through the cracks that maybe shouldn't have. So, like, there was the Sonic and Melee rumor. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I think EGM published that, or Nintendo Power, one of the two of them published how to get it, quote unquote. And it was this ridiculous, like, you had to kill, I forget how many of the combatants in the Cruel Melee mode. And I just remember sitting there desperately trying to get to that number, couldn't do it. And then, like, very soon after that, discovering, oh, it's a lie, you can't get Sonic.
Yeah, that's almost like... almost as valuable as secrets in games is like fake secrets in games.
Wasn't there a rumor that Luigi was on top of Peach's castle in Mario 64?
No, the rumor was that if you look at there's a sign in the courtyard area where the booze are.
Yeah.
In the fountain, if you look at it, it says something about Luigi. And people were like, oh, that must mean Luigi's in the game. And
well, there's also a rumor that he was playable. Right?
Yeah, yes. that's what I'm getting at.
To do that. And, you know, there's obviously the famous rumors for, like, resurrecting Aeris in Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, yeah.
Mario 64, I did the trick to get onto the roof. So this one was less a secret, but more just like, If you run up the hill, you have like triple jump, turn around, slide, hit the wall, wall jump a few times, and you get on the roof and you don't have to get all the coins or all the stars. That was another one that Nintendo Power circulated.
You know, I don't remember, excuse me, how we discovered this. I don't know if we, it probably would have been Robert. I don't know if Robert read it somewhere or looked it up or if it was just a happy accident. But the loach in Ocarina of Time, in the fishing, the fishing hole, is it's such a weird little secret, but it's really satisfying. It's so complicated and it's so annoying. It's like you have to fish it up from this very, very particular part of the fishing hole. But I mean, you could be facing it. You think that you're going to do it right, and you just have to keep doing it over and over again, throwing your rod and hoping that it grabs the loach. But then if you grab the loach, I think the loach is actually the only way to get the golden scale, or the easiest way to get the golden scale. Probably the easiest way. Because you start fishing up all these just gigantic fish, because you need to hit a record. You need to get a record-breaking fish to get the golden scale. But this makes it significantly easier because you're pulling up all these gigantic fish. And I think the doesn't the fishing guy tell you something about cheating?
Yeah, like you're not supposed to use lures that aren't the one that he gave you.
Yeah. Oh, then there's also you can take his hat.
Yes, that's another fun one.
That's another one.
Well, you know, Ocarina of Time was interesting because that game, for years, we'd find little things. And I believe the last secret that I found, I mean, it was already a long time ago, but the game had been out for, I believe, 8 years at this point, because I remember remarking about it when it happened. But if you go over to where Jabu Jabu is, there's this, like, route that you can take that leads you up to this kind of high vantage point that's over his, you know, little pond or whatever, that his lake that he sits in. I had no clue that existed for years. And then one day I was just playing, because I think I've beaten Ocarina, like, at least, I can't even count. It's been many times I've beaten it, but on one of the numerous playthroughs I'm going through, and I find I think you have to turn on the Lens of Truth, and then you find this weird route, and I'm just like, I've been playing this game for years, and somehow I found another secret that I didn't know about.
I think those are the best secrets, the ones that can't actually, like, because they're not, like, systematically laid out for you, it's not really necessary, right? That kind of thing just can't evade you forever. Robert, you had mentioned, like, how the internet changed things. And I think it was, obviously it did, but other things that I think of as kind of, like, sounding the death knell for this kind of school ground secret is even just, like, well, achievements, or more generally games that do more to track what you've done or what you've found. Like, if a game tells you you're close to 100% complete, then it changes how you think about, like, how much possibility, how much strangeness is left in the game. And I kind of miss not knowing that stuff. Obviously, we can't roll back the internet, but I think part of the appeal of the Souls games from FromSoft is that they do a lot less to make it clear how much unexplored territory there is. Because all the secrets are so obtuse, and because there's so little that the game actually provides to guide you, that's part of why there was kind of like an online version of School Ground Whispers that popped up around the Demon Souls and Dark Souls community. I think for the first Dark Souls, people still don't know whether there is a purpose to, or if so, what it is. But there's an item in the game. When you start Dark Souls, you choose what your character looks like, how ugly you want him to be. Not ugly is not an option. Your character's going to be ugly. You choose how ugly they're going to be. You choose whether you're playing male or female. You choose your starting class. And you also get to choose what they call a starting gift. Everyone says the most useful is the master key, because you can open doors right away that you otherwise have to wait for. There's some other, like, resources that you can get. One of them is a mysterious pendant. The pendant, 10 years later, Nobody has found a use for the pendant. So there's, like, they just put into the game, presumably at this point, they just put into a game an item that has no purpose, just to troll players. But the uncertainty about that lingers to this day. Like, people have, like, tried to crawl through the code looking for some purpose. So they think, like, well, probably there's nothing, but there's still that doubt. Like, nobody knows.
That's like in Mario Sunshine, there's the book that is at the So it's, I think, the secret in Noki Bay, mm-hmm. and you go into this bottle, and as you descend into the depths of the bottle, there's this kind of strange structure that's at the bottom, and behind this metal door is this book that's just sitting there, and like you have to manipulate the camera to even see it, and that was something that like sparked a lot of debate among fans of like, well, what is that book? Can you get to the book?
Mm-hmm.
That to me is just so much more interesting than the systematic piece by piece. Here's the achievement. You did this. You did that. It's
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like it takes away some of the fun. I mean, I do think it's kind of hard to completely replicate some of the wonder that older games had. Because going back to Super Mario Bros., when that launched, people are suddenly like secret hungry. You know, like, mm-hmm. oh, you know, what is there to find? But I think every time anyone boots up a Mario game now, it's okay, you know, there's the main levels and then there's going to be the secret levels and it's not a secret anymore. Like, it's just this is what you're going to find.
Yeah, you're not going to want to hear this, or maybe more accurately, Angela's not going to want to hear this. You can still get those experiences, but you have to go to like less explored indie games.
Yeah.
Well, sure. But, I you know, still just the idea that we sit and it's like this data-driven world, right? Where like mm-hmm. everything's cataloged and charted, and it's like it's in everything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think an example of this for sports people is like baseball, right? Where it's like, oh, well, you know, if you break the numbers down, if you just swing for a home run every single time, that's technically more efficient than trying to do. And it's like, okay, I get that, but this is boring. Like, I don't want to hear it. It's like when Moneyball came out, the Oakland A's became infamous for, you know, no stealing. And it's like, you know, if you try to steal, you know, you might get out. Whereas if you just, you know, take your bat, or if you just, you know, wait until a hit comes or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but that's boring. Because it's like, you can steal, and if you do steal, wow, you've just progressed the base,
Robert,
without having to get a hit.
You don't go to the World Series by being interesting, okay?
Anyway.
Like, their incentives are shaped in a very particular way.
All I know is it's like from everything from basketball with the three-pointers, and it's just like, it just gets annoying. It's like everybody, it's like, you know, it's like trying to figure out, you know, I figured out the secret. It's like, go to hell. It's like, give me a rally of just a bunch of like singles and doubles, and I'm just as thrilled with that as I am watching somebody hit a bunch of home runs.
Well, then you got to change the rules to incentivize that. Like, what if in a tie in baseball, instead of going to overtime, whoever stole the most bases won?
I mean, I guess. Anyway.
You know, I secrets that are almost purposeless, just like this pendant mm-hmm. in Dark Souls or the book. In Noki Bay and in Mario Sunshine. I find those really fascinating because there is the question of, did developers do this just to troll players? Or were they planning on doing something with this later on? But then you have stuff like, you know, Link's Awakening and the shopkeeper, where, you know, if you steal from him and then you go back in and he kills you, and then I think permanently... Your file
thief.
Name is changed to Thief.
Yeah.
There's no point to it. It doesn't benefit you. It really doesn't hurt you.
It's
other
very
than the one death.
Too,
yeah, yeah.
It's like the consequence. It's
yeah.
like you got it free, and now you bear that forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that would probably yeah. offend quite a few modern gamers. Well,
yeah.
Why am I labeled this forever?
You can't do anything about it. And it's just this funny little thing. But then, like, you know, I think of Mario RPG. And I remember, first there's the game, like the, I can't remember what it's called now, but the game that you get from that little toad kid.
In the inn.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think it's in Mushroom Kingdom or the, or Castletown?
Yeah.
It's
yeah. One of the two. But, you know, that, I don't think you actually get anything for achieving any high scores. It's just this fun little game within a game that you can play. And it's just... That's like a reward in itself.
Well, that's like when they were developing Ocarina of Time, the fishing game was just something one of the developers was doing for fun.
Yeah.
And then he tells all the others, like, by the way, I made a fishing game.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, just throw it in there. And all of a sudden it's tied into the plot and progression. And,
you know,
I mean, those secrets are fun because it's, it again, goes back to like the data mining, right? Where
mm-hmm.
you can figure out every little thing. But back when, I guess probably up to maybe the mid-2000s is when it was just like, we're going to do stuff. There's going to be stuff left behind in the code. Who cares? We didn't get to implement this. We didn't get to implement that.
Yeah.
And it leaves you wondering.
Like, you brought up the stop and swap in Banjo.
Well, I was going to get to that. I didn't mention it today. But okay. I was going to say, that's probably the ultimate example of, like, a secret in a game.
Yeah.
Where, like, nothing will ever top the height of stop and swap. So for those who don't know what it is, so Banjo-Kazooie came out on Nintendo 64, and Rare had this brilliant idea where they're like, okay, if you turn off the N64 and you take a game out, there's data that's still left behind in the N64's little teeny bit of internal memory. And their idea was you stop the game, you swap in another cartridge, and it'll take that data and pull it into the game that you just popped in. So they had all these ideas for stop and swap. Like, it even goes into Donkey Kong 64. Like, they were like, it's going to connect to that. It's going to connect to Banjo-Tooie. And then Nintendo comes along, and they altered something with later models of the N64, where the amount of time that the data was lingering in the internal memory was, like, 3 seconds instead of 10. And they were just like, there's no way anyone's going to be able to, or the majority of people won't be able to swap it fast enough. So all of this code for stop and swap is still in Banjo-Kazooie. And the way to access these, there were these hidden eggs that were part of the stop and swap. Well, the sandcastle floor in the, I forget what the beach level is called, but if you went in, you would enter these long codes that would give you each egg, and it would open these different areas around the world of the game. And like, and as a kid, again, Nintendo Power published this. I don't know how they got hold of the codes, but I don't think they understood it's not meant to be accessible. So, you know, everybody who had the game and had Nintendo Power was like, oh, I'm going to go in and enter the codes. And like, when you beat Banjo naturally, I think Mumbo Jumbo or Bottles shows up and says, you missed these things. And it's like, what do you mean I missed these things? I went through every bit of the game, and it shows you the stop and swap stuff. Well, you go and get it all, and then nothing. You're just sitting there with all this stuff in your inventory, no way to do anything with it. And for, like, years, it became this debate among fans. There's the Blair Witch Project, which was this website that just went into the minutiae of stop and swap. They've talked to the developers, who would always give these cheeky teases about what it may or may not have been. And then when it finally came to Xbox Live, when they released Banjo on there, stop and swap was finally implemented, and it was nothing. Like, it was some stupid thing where it's like you got some extra eggs or something in Banjo-Tooie. And it's like, I don't think it was ever going to live up to the hype, but just the hype was incredible. Like, the ultimate secret. I don't know if anything tops it.
I think that technique of, like, pulling out cards and putting in different ones on the N64 has been used in some speedrun strats even.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Interesting. Because it does kind of allow the introduction of arbitrary data into the game.
You know, I was thinking when we were talking, I was thinking back to Mario RPG. I don't know why, but the fight with Culex and the existence of Culex scared me. I don't know why it scared me, because
he's creepy looking.
He is creepy. Monstro Town is incredibly cute.
But, innocent.
Yeah, but and innocent. But Monstro Town also has a bit of an odd feeling. There's something slightly off about it. And then you get that creepy door, and it's locked. And then I think his neighbors, which is funny because they're just these little Goomba minions, they're like, oh, yeah, we can hear stuff coming from next door, but we don't know who lives there, basically. They can't be bothered. They're just like, yeah, we hear weird stuff coming from next door. And then eventually you can unlock that door and fight him. And I don't know why. When I was a kid, it just made me nervous. Creeped me out. The most recent example of a secret that I can think of, I hadn't looked this up. I really just came across it on my own by accident. It was actually in Animal Crossing in New Horizons. One of my neighbors had said something really weird to me. It had this really odd, eerie feeling. I think it was Zucker. He was like, yeah, I fell asleep on my couch, and I woke up He what was odd was that he gave like a specific date and time. I think he said it was around 3 a.m. on a Saturday, I think is what he, how he described it. And said that there was some really creepy TV show that came on. And he was like, I know I didn't dream it. So I actually stayed up until 3 a.m. on a Saturday, I think is what it was. And this really creepy TV show comes on your TV. And it's like, it's aliens. It's not a TV show. It's aliens broadcasting into your TV. And they're like talking, you know, everything's gibberish in Animal Crossing, but they're talking. And you'll see like a UFO and then the alien's head talking to you. And then the imagery kind of repeats back and forth. And then it just shuts out. And it's just dead air. And even though it's Animal Crossing and it's just a video game, it freaked me out sitting up alone at 3 a.m. on a Saturday watching that creepy TV show come on. And it's pointless. There's no point to it. It doesn't do anything. It just is there to unnerve you.
Thank you for not waking me up in your panic.
My panic.
I think I think this might veer more into Easter egg, though it's also kind of secret too, is in the original Metal Gear, the memory card thing. So like if you
Metal
had
Gear or Metal Gear Solid?
Metal Gear Solid, sorry. So if you have your memory card plugged into your PS1 and it has data from Konami games, I think maybe even one or two things that aren't Konami, but definitely Konami. Psycho Mantis, when you're in that battle with him, he will read your mind or your memories or whatever, and he accesses the memory card and he'll see what you play. He's like, oh, so you've been playing, you know, whatever game. So that was a pretty cool little bit of fan service, but also just, you know, again, one of those oddball secrets, because if you don't have that data on your memory card, you'll never see it happen. But if you do, boom, you get this like little bit of extra reward.
Yeah.
It's cool. I know, like, I'm not a huge fan of the Metal Gear series in general, but they've been good about breaking your expectations playing with them. And just kind of exploring the boundaries of what they can do. I think it's in Metal Gear Solid 3 where there's a boss you can defeat just by waiting for time to pass.
Yes. The end.
He's like an old guy, right?
Yes. Well, he's interesting because you can kill him a couple ways. So there's a scene where he's being rolled into a facility. And if you act fast enough, you can actually shoot him in his wheelchair and kill him then and there. Huh. And you don't even have to do the boss battle. And then if you do get to the boss battle with him, I believe if you just turn the game off after you save and like let, I think it's a, just a day or a week go by and you boot it up again, he died of old age. That is freaking hilarious. I think, you know, I can't remember if anything like that has popped up in Metal Gear 4 or 5, but I mean, that first example of the PS1 Metal Gear, that is some just like classic messing with your head stuff that Kojima did, because like even the box is utilized, because you have to get in touch with Meryl, and when you have to figure out her codec frequency, I think somebody says the numbers on the back of the box or something like that, and you have to think about back of the box, what box, and it's like it's explicitly meaning your box for the game, and then the code's right there.
It's a little obtuse, but it's like a nice implementation of, because it basically it's like an anti-piracy measure, right?
And I guess that is kind of what it boils down to.
Yeah. Same as like the 747 code in Star Tropics, where they're like, Mike, you got to take the piece of paper.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it, with the game, you got to take that piece of paper, that letter I sent you, and submerge it.
Yes, that was another super cool little trick right there. I mean, I guess you mentioned it, you know, anti-piracy. There's stuff with games where there's anti-piracy measures built in, and those are secrets that you're only going to get if you're trying to get the game illegally. So like I believe Chrono Trigger, if it can sense that you have a pirated copy, it lets you get to the point where you time travel back for the first time, I believe, and that's a decent chunk of gameplay, and when you get to it, the loop never ends and it will not let you exit out of it, so you've wasted all your time leveling up to get to that point, and then the game's like, we know that it's not a legit copy, you're never going to get past it.
You know, it's really only, I guess it depends on how you do it. You can waste your time going around the Millennial Fair, but it still should be only like, you know, 5 to 10 minutes into the game. But it's cool because it basically, like, the anti-piracy measure basically turns the game into a demo for the game, right?
I think Serious Sam, one of the games, like maybe the third game, it has this enormous scorpion creature that will spawn if it can tell that you're using a pirated copy, and it's invincible and unkillable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't a secret or an Easter egg in really at all, but I had recently written a news piece for Nintendo Joe talking about this disc that a former Nintendo of America employee had found, a floppy disc. And he was working on the localization for Earthbound at the time. Earthbound hadn't come out yet. And so he and his wife were just clearing out some old things, and she found a box of stuff and asked him to go through it. And he comes across this floppy disk, and he realized that he had unfortunately overwritten almost everything on the floppy disk with just different work, whatever he was working on at the time. But he sent it to, I believe they're called the Video Game Historical Foundation, something like that. I think I might have that wrong, but they're dedicated to preserving video games. And so he sent them the floppy disk and said, hey, can you restore the data that's on here? And they did. And what they wound up finding was the pre-final script for Earthbound. And so even though they're not secrets, it is incredibly fascinating seeing the changes that were made to the game. And some of them appear to have been happening mere weeks before the release of Earthbound. And so, again, not necessarily secrets per se, you know, definitely different from, you know, traditional secrets and Easter eggs in a game, but still really interesting seeing this unearthed content. Mm-hmm. You never would have known otherwise, but it existed. And like, this was the pre-final script, and these were the things that they were going to have in the game, and they decided to change last minute. I find that incredibly fascinating.
I don't think it's a clear line between like whether this counts as a secret or not. Because even like some of the things that we consider secrets in games, like the Konami code, I think is really only in there to make things easier for testers, and it just didn't get removed for release.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know? I believe that is what happened with that code.
Yeah. And just, yeah, I mean, this is just like, wasn't part of the intended experience, I guess, necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but it's still in there.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know, like, I don't think it's that far off from stuff that actually did get left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
TCRF, by the way, thecuttingroomfloor.net is definitely worth going to if you like, if you like seeing content that is in the code of games. There's two other anti-piracy measures that are very worth noting. If you play Arkham Asylum, Batman won't glide, which basically makes the game unbeatable. And then Spirit Tracks, if it's pirated, you don't have controls for the train.
Oh, so that's
super funny. I remember in, maybe it's Call of Duty 3... There was something to this particular Easter egg. There's more to it than what I'm going to quote. I just can't remember what it was, but I think you play Call of Duty 3, Modern Warfare 3, or it might be Black Ops. It's one of these two games. You go into multiplayer, and on one of the maps, I think if you fly like a drone or something, you can discover this hidden upstairs room that has like a bunch of teddy bears in it, I think. And it was some kind of wink and a nod to fans. I can't recall what it was, but I remember my friends being fascinated by that when we were all playing.
You know, one example of a game that has some interesting secrets, and I find it odd because of the type of game it is Beetle Adventure Racing. Because, oh, yeah. You know, like, Zach is head in his hand.
Zach is moaning over here, he doesn't, even though he knows it's a great game.
He doesn't understand why... We love
how does this
game.
Keep coming up?
It's a great game.
A great game.
And the soundtrack is amazing. I'll just sit and listen to the soundtrack sometimes. For anyone not familiar with Beetle Adventure Racing, it was an N64 game, and it came out at the time that Volkswagen had redesigned the Beetle.
Yeah, the VW bug.
And so it's almost like a... You almost kind of consider it like just one big advertisement for the VW Beetle, but I think that's being a little unfair. But it is a genuine...
I like that they had to put adventure in the name.
It is an adventure. Because yes. You're going to all these different locations.
Because the assumption of like racing a VW bug is not one of adventure. So they have to like specify. It's like, no. But exciting.
It is exciting. It's a great game. It's a super fun racing game. like I said, it has a really good soundtrack, but you'd be going through different places. Like, I can't even remember what, I think it might be like a snow level. I might have that wrong, but you can encounter a UFO. And, like, for no reason, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't impact the race, but you could just, you're flying through and all of a sudden there's a gigantic UFO overhead. And there were a lot of different secret routes that you could take through the different levels, and you would see different things or you would experience things that you wouldn't experience if you didn't find the secret routes. And it I guess it just felt unusual to me, because it's not unusual for a racing game, obviously, to have shortcuts and different routes. But I felt like part of the incentive was the odd things that you'd encounter in the environment if you found those secrets. It wasn't just a shortcut to speed you through. It was a shortcut to see the weird UFO, or to, I think there was like a city level and you would like, you could drive through a building. Just like odd things that you wouldn't encounter if you didn't find those secrets.
Yeah, Beetle Adventure Racing is pretty cool. That's one of those games that would like never get made today. Very much of the era.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess the grandfather of like major secrets like this is in, I believe it's Adventure on Atari, right? Where you are in the, like, so Adventure is kind of a precursor to Zelda. You know, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's an adventure game. And at the time, they would not credit the people who made these games. So, like, you would beat the game and there was no, like, credits page saying, this is the programmer and this is the person who did this and that. And so I guess, I can never remember the guy's name, but I guess he kind of had enough of that crap. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to put a secret in the game where you find a room and it shows you my name so that you know I made the damn thing. And that was, you know, people figured it out somehow, how to activate this secret. And that was a big deal at the time for people playing.
You know, I know I've mentioned this in a previous episode, but Majora's Mask has a glitch. And it's been a while since I've done it, but it involved, you know, there's Seikon the thief. And he has his hideout, and there's something you can do where I believe you can access the hideout early or something odd, but you like roll, you have to roll Link to his like forward somersault at this like crack. It's like a crack in like a doorway, and you either access Seikon's hideout early because you can only access it on a certain day in the 3-day cycle at a certain time. And then if you get out, if you talk to anyone, the game freezes.
Well, there's a little more to it. That's the trick for the Fierce Deity Mask.
Yeah, there we go.
So when you go in, there's this sequence where there's like a conveyor.
Yes.
I think you're trying to get the wedding mask back.
Yes.
And there's a way to get it so that you change the inventory as Link's going through, and it forces him to put on the Fierce Deity Mask.
Yeah.
And once it's all completed, he's the Fierce Deity until you turn the game off.
Yeah.
And that is what makes it freeze if you talk to people.
Yeah. And it's like interesting that you can go through the game world running around as the Fierce Deity. It just sucks that it's like, don't talk to anyone, because otherwise then the game's going to freeze. It's interesting.
It's kind of neat too, because the game scales up his size because he's bigger, and it makes the game world feel smaller as a result.
Yes, it does. It's definitely a super weird feeling. You know, one thing I was never interested in, though, I have never been interested in like Game Shark or Game Genie, like the things that would do like weird, it would either unlock secrets or make weird changes to the game. Like, I don't even remember where or how we were playing this. But Robert, do you remember there was like a Game Shark version of Ocarina of Time that we were playing?
So our Uncle Michael Robles on our mom's side, he had a Game Shark, and we used it to, I think it just like unlocked everything from the outset. And so that was weird. Like, you go into different areas of the game when you weren't supposed to be able to.
Yeah, like I remember being in Dodongo's Cavern as Adult Link. And same thing that Robert's talking about, like in Majora's Mask, where the dungeon is scaled to Young Link's size. So when you're in there as Adult Link, it feels smaller, and you can access certain areas that Young Link simply couldn't reach because he was too short.
Yeah, I think we lucked out, because if I'm remembering right, I think Game Shark and Game Genie are actually messing with the code in the game.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is it, like, created that weirdo save file.
Yeah.
And if you were playing without the Game Shark attached, it still had the save file in the weird state that it was in.
Mm-hmm.
And the game had trouble resolving not having the Game Shark attached and still having this altered data. That couldn't get deleted from the cartridge fast enough.
I didn't like it. It felt weird. And
Game Genie was great, honestly. I think it probably works better with the older systems.
Yes.
Because those can... Just the way they're built, it's easier for them to, like, break without breaking everything. Like, I remember even just, like, messing around with the original Super Mario Brothers with, like, codes that do things just like, you can jump all the way up, you know?
Yes, that was very appealing.
The thing that I most associate with the Game Genie, though, was on Super Nintendo for Final Fantasy IV. This is... I don't know if this counts as a secret per se, but like in the localization process for Final Fantasy IV, a ton of stuff got cut out of the US version of the game. Characters had abilities pruned, and entire kinds of items got removed from the game. Or as I found out when I connected to the Prodigy message boards, they had actually been what they call dummied out. So like the code for these items still existed in the game, but they weren't accessible through normal means with the US version of the game. But if you used a Game Genie code and went through as a rigmarole of like moving items to specific places in the inventory to control this, you could access these old items. And I remember it was like confusing because they're all just called when they were dummied out, like Square's programmers literally renamed them all dummy. So there's like 80 different items you can get in Final Fantasy II on the Super Nintendo, which just are all named dummy, but they all have different effects. You know, some of them are summon monsters that you can learn. Some of them are items you can like use in battle, etc. But just the idea that the Game Genie exposed this entire hidden world in the code was really... really cool.
My biggest Game Genie memory is not being able to enter the codes while looking at the pages. So this is when I was a really small kid. For whatever reason, I couldn't like look, enter the info. Somebody had to tell me. So like my grandma, Angela, who played video games not at all, knew nothing about them, was very kind, and she would sit with me, and I would say, okay, Grandma, read me the code for blah, 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 and she'd read the letters, and I'd punch them in, and that's how I'd put them in.
Well, unless anyone else has any other...
Yeah, I just want to ask straight off if anyone, like, what's your favorite video game secret? Or let me rephrase it, what is the greatest video game secret?
Oh.
Take that however you like.
I guess I have to stick with Mario World. It's too influential in my mind going... not because like it's not just the Star Road. It's that there's the secret within Star Road, which is mm-hmm. the special zone. And then the weirdness of those levels. And then at the end of it, everything's transformed. And something about that felt so profound. And I just can't think of anything I've played ever since that has come close.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean... The way that all of the secrets, as you continue to unlock them, fundamentally change the world, the entire world, is really profound. I also can't think of another game that I've played that has the secrets have that much of an impact on the world. It really kind of makes for an entirely different gameplay experience once you've unlocked everything or even close to everything. And really also ups the replayability of that game. So, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like you want to beat it normal, and then you want to beat it with all the Koopa Troopas with the Mario masks on.
Exactly.
I think those older games, too, there is a sense of... I can't think of the right word for this, but it's not that it felt like it was this living thing, but they're mysterious. Mm-hmm. Like the NES games and the SNES games, it felt mysterious, these worlds that existed in them.
Yeah.
And when you encountered something like Star Road, it was just like, what secrets are in this cartridge that I don't know about? Mm-hmm. Like, how deep does the rabbit hole go?
Yeah.
And like, even into the N64 era that continued, because like Stop and Swap Sabasoth probably second to me in terms of like game secrets. Mm-hmm. But even like GoldenEye, when you're on the dam level, there's that island that's off in the distance that has a little guard tower on it. You can interact with it. You can shoot out the windows. And so it's like, so can I get there? Mm-hmm. And like people spent hours, probably days, trying to figure out how do I access that island, which you ultimately cannot. But you know,
before, Zach, I have you answer the question. There is one series that I forgot to bring up that I actually associate heavily with secrets. It's the Donkey Kong Country series. There are just so many little, these bonus mini games you can play, or little, you know, caves or rooms that you can find, you know, the barrels that you can find. It's just constant in that game.
It's definitely more on the, like, explicit, deliberate side of things, but it's almost like the whole game is an Easter egg hunt.
Yeah, and I really, really enjoy the areas where, like, when you play as the ostrich, what's the ostrich's name?
Espresso.
Yeah, Espresso, or you're on the back of the swordfish.
And guard.
Yeah, and it's just, you're just collecting, you just have a limited amount of time, just collect as many of these shiny gold emblems as you can. And it's just super satisfying to just, like, you know, when you're Espresso and you're flying, you're gliding, and it's just, you're taking out, like a whole wave of these emblems.
Even that had a secret, because when you get to that area, each one of them, there's a giant one of the animal tokens, and it doubles your total, but you have to find them.
Yep.
My favorite Easter egg in that series is in the third game. One of the bears tells you that there's the Lost World, and you can actually get to it without his help, and you have to circle these three rocks that are in this water, this like area of water north of him. You go around it enough times, the Lost World appears. And if you go back to him, he's mad because you figured it out without him. And he says, you must have got that from Nintendo Power. And he says, I know I did.
So
cheeky.
So Zach.
Yeah. Before I get to that, I want to say I'm surprised both of you would like take the like Star Road from Mario World as like, I guess, a more iconic secret than like the Inverted Castle from Symphony of the Night.
That is a pretty good one.
I mean, you know, like, for me, I think I was going more off of the question just of the greatest.
Yeah.
And to me, like I said, I still think that the overall impact of the secrets on the entire game world, just, that's where I'm going off of.
Symphony of the Night's Inverted Castle wouldn't even be my choice, but it does feel like kind of a weird landmark, because that, you know, I mentioned like completion percentages earlier, and I remember there being games before Symphony of the Night, like the first Donkey Kong Country, where the percentage, I think like the percentage completion in Donkey Kong Country can go to like 102 or 103 or something like that.
For the first one, maybe. I know it's based off of the completion of getting all the Kong letters.
But in Symphony of the Night, I swear the completion percentage goes up to like 206 or 207% because it flips, like you can find the secret that takes you to an entire upside down castle.
Yeah.
It gives you like this whole new space to explore, opens up new endings, etc.
Yeah.
Now, my choice, though, is actually the Hadouken in Mega Man X.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Like the method of getting it is constructed like the kind of BS secrets that people would make up. It's like, okay, you gotta get all the weapons, you gotta get all that, you gotta make sure that all your energy tanks are full, you gotta go back to Armored Armadillo Station, you get on the platform and you jump off and you
my cousin told me that if you
and then you can kill Sigma in one hit. Like the whole thing,
I swear he told me the truth. He was telling me the truth the whole time.
Is just ridiculous in the way that like truth. Yes, it's like it's constructed like a schoolyard lie.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. I also want to circle back on, I agree with you, Robert, that like in older games it does feel different. In part because, I mean, part of this is just the experience of using the Game Genie, which can like demonstrate that the worlds can change in unpredictable ways. But it does kind of feel like, I don't know, it's almost more like in the conceit of something like Harry Potter, where there's like this magical world that's just out of sight, right? Like the idea of like platform 9 3/4, that kind of thing. But like in those old games, there is this like this thin veneer of like the Mushroom Kingdom or whatever over this like veil, like this veil that's covering this strange code underneath. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that feeling is less there in newer games.
Mm-hmm. I do think too, it's kind of sad how now it's like, I mean, there are plenty of games that give you secrets to discover, you know, whether it's indie games or even like some of the mainstream stuff. But now it's sort of like if you were going to do the inverted castle in Symphony of the Night, it would probably be DLC.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Here comes the inverted castle DLC. And like,
you're dead right.
Yeah.
And like, on one hand, I get it. I mean, it's more effort, right? It's like, we're going to give you this whole extra thing just as like a secret you could find.
Yeah.
But from a, like, especially with today's costs and all the people that make games, it probably makes more sense to do it that way. But it was super cool back in the day where it's like, you figure out these button combos that give you a code. Mm-hmm. You figure out, like, oh my god, so the Capcom Arcade Stadium, I think is what it's called, that just came out on Switch, and I think it's going to come out on PS4 and the series soon. They released a code for that. I wish I could remember what it was. It was something stupid. It's like, it would have been a cheat code back in the day. And it's something that you pay a dollar for, and it gets unlocked across all of the games. And it's just like, why is this a dollar? Like, at least give me something substantial. But like, this is just like it was something so insignificant, and they turned it into a DLC purchase. And it's just like, oh my god, like, was that the nail in the coffin for secrets right there?
Like, you know, like, to be fair to modern games, like, the fact that these things are like online and patchable does allow for other secrets to pop up even down the line. I don't know if either you know the deal with the Bovine Defense Force in Witcher 3. Okay, so the starting area in Witcher 3 is called White Orchard. Mm-hmm. If you can eventually get a lot of money in the game, but money's pretty tight early on.
It is.
And people figured out that you could, I forget if you had to do something special to get this to happen, but you could kill the cows in White Orchard.
Oh.
And then take their hide, mm-hmm. sell the hide, and then if you meditate, the cows came back.
Mm-hmm.
So people would just do that on loop.
Oh.
And this allowed them to like kind of like break the early game economy. So in one of the earlier patches for Witcher 3, CD Projekt Red added this feature where if you kill, I think it was 6 cows. It was like some number of cows. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to do it accidentally. But if you start farming the cows, this giant monster shows up. Mm-hmm. It's called a chort. It's kind of like this hulked out goat,
mm-hmm.
Which it gets called, they call it the Bovine Defense Force. But the chort will just kill you because it's like level 27 and your Geralt is like level 3.
Way too weak at that point.
The problem with that though was that, so that's kind of like a funny secret on its own. They have their own Gwent card even.
Oh.
But people figured out they could just farm the chort instead if they were good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that was even more lucrative.
It's funny.
Well, you know, I'm recalling now, it's an invincibility code for the Capcom Arcade Stadium.
Mm.
So you can be invincible across all games for a dollar. It's like, oh my god.
Well,
they already have credit feeding. Like, what is the point?
I was kind of thinking that too. I was just like, I guess you don't have to deal with, you know, dying and respawning at that point. But it's like, okay.
Yeah. Well, this has been a very fun and illuminating walk down memory lane regarding cheats and Easter eggs and the way they used to be.
Secrets.
And
I feel like we're forgetting stuff, but
oh, I'm sure we are.
There's, you know, decades to cover. There's a lot of things we could say.
Yeah.
We have at some point have to choose not to say everything in the world.
Right. I think we've already said a lot. But thank you for joining us on this 11th episode of the 7 Minutes Podcast. And we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.